Hey Dreamers, Joe here, and I am so proud to say that my wife Melissa and I have launched our first business together, monthlycardclub.com. When you become a member, you'll get high-quality, handcrafted birthday cards delivered to your door every month. I sat down to talk with co-founder Melissa Pardo about the experience she had starring in her first video for monthlycardclub.com. Now, you recently did a video. Why don't you tell me about the experience that you had making the video?
Well, it was very chilly because you decided to shut off the air conditioning while we did it so that no noise would come through the video. So I was freezing, my nose was running, but it was fun. I'm sure you're going to have a blooper up very soon.
Well, we had our neighbor across the street scraping snow off the ground.
Oh, that's right. We had to keep looking out the window to make sure he was done.
MonthlyCardClub.com. Apparently, we don't believe in heat.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Lou Mangiello, who is making his dreams come true by leaving New Jersey. I can't believe he'd want to leave New Jersey because it's amazing. And his career behind in law, being a lawyer, not just a paralegal or a stenographer. Is that the right word, stenographer?
Right.
Or the doorman at a courtroom. To move to Florida, Orlando specifically, to podcast and write about Disney full time. Glad to have you on the show, Lou.
Joe, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you taking the time to come on today. I know you have like a super jam-packed schedule and you're always constantly on the move and doing things. And it's kind of what you kind of have to be in order to be an entrepreneur, which I don't know if you'd consider yourself an entrepreneur. I would think you would, but you're just all over the place with what you've got going on.
I do consider myself an entrepreneur. And yeah, man, you know, there's no such thing as the 9 to 5. There's no such thing as weekends. You are hustling all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when we do work for other people, we think about it. But when we do work for ourselves, we don't tabulate that.
No, not at all. And I think sometimes the frustration as an entrepreneur is you want to work when other people aren't working, right? So I sometimes get some of my best work done from 10 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, nobody else is working at that time. So if you need to get something done or need to get an email answered, sometimes it's frustrated because, you know, Saturdays and Sundays and nighttime, you can't always get a hold of somebody.
Yeah, I run into that all the time. I love working when nobody else is around or I have like little to no distractions, people not being able to get a hold of me because they're sleeping or, you know, just people not being in a work frame of mind when I'm up and ready to get stuff done. But it also makes it hard because like I want to get stuff done during the day too. I don't know if you run into that. Does your wife work too?
She does. She works full time and I have two young kids, but I work out of my home. So by 7:30 in the morning, the house is empty and it's quiet so I can focus. And then when they come home, it's family time. And then once Ray goes to sleep, I sort of hit my stride again, probably about 8:30, you know, 9 o'clock at night. And like you, I like that time to really like crush and get stuff done because there are no other distractions. The phone isn't ringing, so nobody else is calling. There's nothing else to take you away from just the tasks that you want to focus on.
Yeah, it's tough too because it's trying to justify that time of, well, nobody's home. I should be getting stuff done. But like sometimes it's like, but I got this phone call, this email, and before you know it, you're off track from what you thought you were going to be doing.
Yeah, and I try and chunk to the best of my ability. Obviously, things change, but you know, things that I can only do during the day, I do that during the day. And stuff that I can do anytime, whether it's writing or researching or web stuff, whatever it may be, I'll save that for a time that I don't have to worry about having contact with other people.
No, I think that's a good way to do it. I try to do it as well, but sometimes things pop up. So today's topic, we're going to talk about how others' vision isn't quite like yours, and how people just can't necessarily see things like you do. And I'm not specifically talking about you, Lou, but I guess I kind of am, since you've made some pretty incredible changes to your life and to your family's life, and it's worked out beautifully for probably many, many reasons, more than just one. But before we get into that, I would love for you to give some background about yourself.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And you know, we all talk about wanting to quit our job and do what we love full time. But then when it comes time to actually doing it, and it's you know, making that kind of a drastic change, people are like, what are you, crazy? Like, quitting your job? That's nuts. And that's exactly what happened to me because, you know, rewind to, you know, early 2000s, I was a lawyer in New Jersey. I was in practice for a number of years, doing plaintiff litigation work. So I was doing trial stuff all the time. And I also actually had a second business. I had an IT consulting company that I had started on the side. So I was really juggling two full-time careers. I'd be in court in the morning. I'd go, you know, be pulling cable, you know, later on in the day for a networking client. I'd go back to the office, see clients, come home, inhale my dinner, go home and do web development until 2 o'clock in the morning. So I was very, very busy. And I think that started me on the path of not sleeping very much. I always had this love of Disney. I was always in the service business. So I had this idea of writing, you know, creating a product and reselling it. So I decided to write a book. All I really knew about was Disney. Very, very long story longer. The book that I set out to have published, that personal challenge, if I can get it published, turned into a multi-book deal, turned into a website, a discussion forum, a community, a podcast going back to 2005. And at some point in like 2007, this little hobby that I had on the side really started to turn into an accidental business. And I said, look, if I'm going to do this, if I want to do this right, and I really want to do this all full time for the rest of my life, I need to go all in. I need to take that leap of faith, which is exactly what I did. I sold my consulting company. I had already been out of the practice of law. I was I was the chief technology officer for a medical imaging company. So I had a very good, very comfortable job. I bought the house that I thought I was going to live in forever. And when I made this decision, and I made it with the support of my wife and my immediate family around me, I sold my house. I brought money to my closing, which, as you know, is not the way it's supposed to go. But I did. I went all in and literally packed up the Honda Odyssey and drove to Florida.
I love how you're specific, like the Honda Odyssey. Do you still have that Honda Odyssey?
We still do. It's like the family. It's like the Griswold family truckster. So like that Honda Odyssey represents a lot more than just the Honda Odyssey to me. Like that was, you know, I look at it and I'm like, that's what we basically, you know, other than what we put in storage, that's what we put our life into. And is a symbol of that leap of faith that we took to be like, all right, we're driving to Florida and we're going to stop and see Pedro. It's south of the border and, you know, start our new life.
How often would you travel to Disney before then?
Well, as a kid, you know, I was very fortunate. We went for the first time in November of 71, which is about 3 weeks after the park opened. And we drove down to Florida, much like the Griswolds, every year, which is where my love for Disney really came from. And then when I was in New Jersey and starting to, you know, write my books and do the website, I was traveling. First, it was every other month. Then it was every month. Then it was every few weeks. And I'm like, look, I'm basically commuting to Florida. Like, this is ridiculous. It just made sense for me to eventually pull the trigger. And, you know, now I literally live, like, right behind Magic Kingdom.
So you hear the fireworks every night. You probably see the fireworks.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in Naples. I was in South Florida for a couple of years. My parents were down there. My dad had gotten sick, so I took care of him until he passed. And then I was like, look, this is, you know, the writing's on the wall. I need to be in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it'd be a lot easier to move because you're already, you know, the three quarters of the way there.
Exactly.
I know in Florida, it's so far away. Everything's so far away.
Yeah, and flat. There's no mountains in Florida. So,
what was your wife's reaction when you were like, okay, it's time to move?
You know, I'm really fortunate. I'm very blessed because, you know, my wife is a great partner. She's a great teammate. She's, you know, my best friend and biggest supporter. And from that very first night, and I can see it like it was yesterday, Joe, that I went upstairs and she was sitting down watching TV. I said, you know, I've got this idea. I'm thinking about writing a book. She looked at me and goes, well, all you know about is Disney World. And I went down the basement and started writing. And I basically haven't come out of the basement, figuratively speaking, ever since. But as things were going on and I started to say, look, this is crazy, me flying back and forth. She's like, you're right. She's like, I think Florida is where we need to be. We always knew we wanted to be in Florida, but we thought it was something that was going to happen 20, 30 years down the road. Like everybody else in New Jersey, you retire to Florida, not move there as a career. She had a great job up here too, but she very much believed in and continues to believe in the vision and the dream. And, you know, I wouldn't be here without her.
Well, that's great that you are able to get that kind of support, and not only the support, but the actual follow through, because that's huge.
Yeah, because as an entrepreneur / solopreneur, it is not a, okay, I'm all in, you know, at the very beginning. It's an everyday struggle. And I mean that because when you're used to going to work and then coming home and leaving work at work and your check comes in and you've got your health benefits, it's a very different lifestyle when you're working out of the home and you are the only person steering the ship. Sometimes you're the only person on the ship as a solopreneur. You are worrying about paying the bills and where's the money going to come in and how is cash flow going. So you need that constant support system. I can't stress enough how important it is, because if you had somebody that said, I don't want you to do this, I don't believe in what you're doing, you can't, no, you cannot go do this, Joe, it's so much more defeating than it may seem, because it's so important to have that support system around you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you had friends as well that were supportive, because at that point, I'm sure you had lots of, you know, friends in the Disney community that were supportive of you doing this.
Well, there was a sort of a transition period, right? And somebody said something to me a long time ago, which I never thought was true until now. I was in my 20s and she said, you know what? You haven't met your best friends yet. And I'm like, what are you, nuts? Like, I've been friends with so-and-so since we were like 9 years old. But she was right, because as we get older, sometimes your goals change and your visions change and things change. And I saw what was starting to happen, which was, you know, I'm very much, you know, a hustler. I've sort of grew up with the entrepreneurial spirit, and I had friends that maybe didn't see that. So when I started podcasting, for example, my friends were like, wait a minute, man, like, you're going to sit in your room by yourself and talk to yourself about Mickey Mouse for an hour a week and hope that somebody finds you and listens? And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. They're like, you're a freak, man. Like, I give you 6 weeks and we just don't get it. Then tell them, oh, by the way, I'm not practicing law anymore. I just quit my job. I brought money to my closing. I'm packing up the Honda Odyssey and I'm moving to Florida to talk about Mickey Mouse. They're like, you're an idiot. You'll be back in 6 weeks. Like, they really were like, they could not wrap their heads around what I was doing. Because yes, like I said before, everybody may want to a certain degree, or some people may want to say, God, I wish I could do X full time. There's a huge nexus between saying that you want to do it and then actually pulling the trigger and going ahead and doing it. And some of those people I don't talk to anymore, because they really didn't believe in me and in what I was doing. And I don't know if they were angry or jealous or whatever it was, but there, you know, now I have a different circle of friends here, and it's not just about the love of Disney. It's a different ideal set. It's a different vision. You know, I do like surrounding myself with that same type of positive person.
Well, look at us. We just walked right into the topic of the day, which is about how other people don't have a vision like you do. And I think you very well described the situation that can occur with people and their friends, and how you think today that these people are, you know, the people you've grew up with, and they're the people that are going to be there for you no matter what. And some of them may very well be those people. But, you know, with the knowledge of you are the average of the five people you hang out with, you sometimes need to change out some of those people. And not that you need to get rid of those people, because as you mentioned, you stayed friends with some of the people that you lived with up here in Jersey, and but you've made more friends. And, you know, we tend to make time for people that we want to make time for. And it's a subconscious thing, I'd say, mostly. But sometimes it is a time thing. And some people can and some people can't appreciate the level of hustle that is brought to the table by certain people for things that they're passionate about. So you're into Disney and you did this awesome thing called WDW Radio, branching out of a book that started in your basement. people couldn't see that because it was about Disney, and they might have gone to Disney once or twice or maybe even once a year, but they don't really get it. They're going because their wife wants to, or their kids, you know, it's for the kids. But if it was about, let's say, plumbing, they love plumbing.
Everybody loves plumbing.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the point, right? So, or gardening, I guess that would be a more leisurely thing. You'd be like, wow, that's well, you would probably understand it because you understand how you, what you had to go through to make what you have happen. But a lot of people wouldn't. They'd be like, oh, gardening. I don't like gardening. That's not it. That doesn't interest me.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a couple of parts. And let me just be clear, Joe, too. Like, I'm not criticizing anybody that likes to just go to work and do their job and come home. It's just not who I am. Like right now, I sort of can feel that I'm sort of unemployable, like because I've been so used to working myself for myself and you know, charting my own course. There's no right or wrong, you know, way. I don't mean to sound like the entrepreneurial way is the only way to go. But I still meet people, even to this day, people who are my peers, my same age, who I tell them what I'm doing. And even a friend of mine once said to me, like, well, when are you going to go out and get a real job? And I'm like, I have a real job. She goes, no, you don't. You don't get up and get dressed and go to an office and get a salary. And I'm like, I do have a real job. I just sort of made it up on my own. And it was so hard for this woman to wrap her head around what I do. Whether and the fact that it's Disney made it all the more unfathomable to her. She's like, yeah, you're just talking about Disney World. And how do you make a living doing that? Again, it's not a right or wrong way, but I do like to surround myself with other entrepreneurs that have that same type of thought and vision. I'm very much a believer in the mastermind set and the mastermind group, because as a solopreneur who sits in his room all day by himself, it's difficult, man. Like, it's hard because you don't have anybody to have that creative outlet with. You don't have anybody to have discussions about an idea or a struggle or a goal or, hey, man, I'm just not feeling it today. So I do like the idea of having a mastermind circle or multiple mastermind circles of people that do sort of follow that same type of vision, that give you a sense of accountability and support when you need it. Because sometimes it is hard to get it from your circle of friends or your family if they just don't understand or buy into what you're doing.
Yeah, or whoever your neighbors happen to be, if they're all retired and they're like, why don't you go get a job with a pension? And I'm like, right. Well, only like a couple of those exist anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to be a mailman.
Yeah, there's a traditional mindset. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, we've all had jobs where we've gone in, we've punched in, punched out and did the 9 to 5. I like this. This is, you know, this excitement and to a certain degree, the fear is what fuels my fire. Like, that's what gets me going. Like, I love like getting up in the morning and getting excited about what I'm going to do. And whether it's going to a job and doing that or creating your own career, I think that everybody should feel that way, that you should get up and be like so excited for the day, man. Like, I am pumped first thing in the morning, and I hate when I'm exhausted at night. I feel so guilty when I'm tired at night, or sometimes if I even take a break, I'm like, oh God, I should be working on this because it's exciting to me. It's really sort of what gets my blood pumping. And I feel bad for people that get up and like, oh, I hate my freaking job, man. I hate my boss, and I go drive in the snow, but I can't wait to go home and work on X. I believe we live in a time that you can take that thing, whatever that thing is that you love, whether it's gardening or golf or plumbing or whatever it may be, and do something with it. You can, if you work hard at it, you can share that passion with people, whether it's, you know, through an online business or a product or a YouTube channel or a blog or whatever it may be. And yeah, man, if you hustle hard, I think there is a way to turn your passion, if you want it to be, you can turn your passion into your profession.
You know, I think you make a good point, and I think that it's important that you focus that passion on what you're passionate about instead of being like, oh, well, I really like writing articles about gardening. Okay, well, I'm going to try to get a job revolving around writing. So you try to get that job, but you wind up not liking that job because you're not writing about gardening. You're writing about the dental world or something like that. You know, I was going to say toothbrushes, but I don't know how long you can write about that, but I'm saying like at a normal job, right? So you're like, well, I'm doing what I love, but it's not doing it about what I love.
Right.
And I think that that's really important to do because, I don't know, did you have a private practice when you were a lawyer?
I did. I clerked, I worked for a judge for a year up in Essex County, and then I was in private practice actually with my father and a couple of other attorneys.
Oh, wow. So wait, what did your dad think of this?
My dad was my biggest supporter. You know, he was always behind what I did. He wasn't like, hey, man, I just paid for 4 years of college and 3 years of law school and all your like food and stuff. And now you want to go talk about Mickey Mouse. He was so supportive of initially me branching out and doing my IT consulting company on the side. And then when I said, look, I want to go and do this full time, he said, don't worry, man. You always have a place to hang your hat. You always have, you know, a place to come back to. You always have your law degree to practice again. So go do it. I got my entrepreneurship spirit from him and my mom, who even when they always had jobs, they had an antique business and a bagel store and a flea market and all these kind of stuff. And I loved that. I loved sort of, you know, the fact that I always watched them and I grew up with them, you know, hustling and doing things that they really, really enjoyed that they eventually turned into full-time businesses. So he was always very much behind what I did and supported what I did. And again, I think that was so vital to my being able to do it full time and be successful at it.
Right. I mean, if you didn't have his support, you probably would have just stayed unhappy as a lawyer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And had that, you know, Cinderella's castle on the wall looking at it and like, man, I wish I could be there and just do everything I have going on in my head.
Right. And to be clear, man, you know, there was never, when I started writing my first book in 2003, there was never sort of the business plan. Like, I'm going to write this book, start a website, start doing this, start making money. It just sort of, it really was a happy accident that it happened that way. And I understand that I'm very fortunate and very blessed that sort of things fell into play the way that they did. But yeah, he was, you know, as he saw it starting to develop and he saw how excited that it got me, I never got up excited about practicing law and arguing every day. It's just not in my DNA. And he saw that. And, you know, as a parent, you want your kid, first and foremost, you want your kids to be happy.
With all the success that you've had, and it's amazing that it's come out of basically like just this idea, like, you know what, I'm going to do this and I don't know if anybody's going to read it. And I don't really have this big grand plan. I mean, we all have ideas in our mind where we would like things to go, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's in the plan. That's just like, hey, you know, if this happens, then this can happen. But we could play the what if game all day long, which is, I think, also very dangerous for entrepreneurs to sit around doing. To your point of having a mastermind group of people that you can actually go to that get what you're doing. What's been the biggest roadblock for you so far?
I think part of the roadblock is that there is no blueprint for what I do. There's no blueprint for what a lot of entrepreneurs do, for people that want to take this thing that they are passionate about and turn it into a business. We are, and this is what it's a roadblock, but it's exciting to me because we are really figuring it out as we go along every single day. There is no, you know, as a lawyer, if you need to figure something out, you go back and you look at the book and there's an answer in there to find. If you are an engineer, you can go and figure out the answer. Whereas here, we're kind of just making it up and pray to God that it works. That's, again, it's the blessing and the curse of doing this. But I think too, Joe, you mentioned something before about, you know, as we start down this journey, I think the important thing too to take away from this is that when I started, I never started out looking at this as, I'm going to do this as a way to make money. I never set out to write a book thinking I was going to be the next J.K. Rowling. I wrote the book to see if I could do it, to see if somebody would validate my work by publishing it. And then eventually, and I believe this, like, because I've lived it, I believe that if you set out to do what you love and just worry about, not dollars and cents, but worry about putting out really good stuff consistently that you're proud of, the money will eventually come. And I really, really believe, and I think that's why you have to be, you know, start out doing the thing that you're passionate about, and then eventually it'll all fall into place and the money will eventually come, as opposed to people who go, hey, this podcasting thing looks really cool. I'm going to start a podcast so I could make money. You're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong if you set out on this journey to try and make money first and then figure out, you know, make yourself love it. Because you mentioned success. And to be clear, my definition of success has nothing to do with dollars and cents. It has to do with levels of happiness. And if that, it, by my definition, I'm like the most successful guy I know.
Well, we are supposed to be the most successful people we know because we're supposed to be able to believe in ourselves, which I think is a big differentiator between, and not necessarily everyone, but people that stay in the 9-to-5 world versus people who leave, but not in the sense of, oh, I'm a 9-to-5er, I'm an entrepreneur. People that stay in the 9-to-5 world and hate their jobs.
Yeah, you know, when I said that I'm the most successful guy that I know, I feel that way again because I'm really, really happy. Like, I'm happy every day. I'm excited every day. And some people, like, hate my positivity so much they want to punch me in the face. I get it, but I do. I live and I breathe a very positive lifestyle because I love what I do. And when I say successful, I'm successful because I'm happy and I want that to become contagious. I want other people to feel that same way and not be unhappy at their jobs because life is too short, man. Life is too short to do things that you don't love and then look back 20 years later with regrets on it. And that's what I try and help people do as I've started, you know, mentoring and coaching and masterminding people. I want to help them overcome their fears and make those kind of positive changes so they do start to lead the life that they really want to lead.
Yeah, I mean, the positivity, I don't think that I could see somebody being as big as you are without being positive. I mean, to the level of somebody wanting to punch you in the face because you're just so, like, you're just oozing the positivity. I get that, especially if you are unhappy in your life for one reason or another, to look at it and be like, well, you know, he's just overly happy. He, you know, Mickey Mouse is not his boss, but he's an indirect boss. And I guess if you compared it to, like, say, a cast member who has to be happy 24/7, even if they are unhappy, a cast member at Disney World compared to you, who's just happy because they are living their dream and they're doing it on their own terms, being them. I heard somebody I was listening to was like, you know, I want to be Kevin Smith because Kevin Smith gets to be Kevin Smith for a living. And I mean, yeah, okay, he's a director and all that. His movies aren't big blockbusters. I mean, he's not Michael Bay or James Cameron or something like that. You know, he's just Michael Smith from New Jersey. Or Michael Smith. He's just Kevin Smith from New Jersey.
And remember, Kevin Smith didn't start out as Kevin Smith. He's Kevin Smith who started out making a movie for $27,000 and eventually became Kevin Smith. He made the movie he wanted to make under his terms, and that led him to the money, right? I'm happy you said he's a perfect example. Yeah. Like, he was just this guy who was like, we're going to make a movie in a convenience store for $27,000 and because he wanted to.
Yeah, and he did it his way. That's the brilliance of it. And it did turn into, you know, I mean, he has some stars in his movies and stuff like that, but for by and large, it's Kevin Smith because he's Kevin Smith.
Yeah, I mean, he shot it in the store that he worked at. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, I want to make this movie and see if I can get Brad Pitt. He's like, no, I'm going to get my buddies and we're going to make a movie. And that's what really kind of kickstarted his career.
Yeah, and what a career. Can't wait for Clerks 3 to come out, actually. This will come out before Clerks 3 comes out, so I can say that. So, Lou, what do your dreams for the future look like?
You know, it's an interesting question because I don't necessarily have specific goals. So for me, it's not like, oh, I eventually want to get to X. The way I live my life is that it's the marathon, not a sprint, but I keep moving the finish line. So I keep moving the finish line around either on purpose or because something new develops and it changes it for me. So I like having goals that are short term that eventually will lead me to wherever I'm going to end up, but I don't know where that place is. just yet. I don't necessarily, Kevin Smith might have said, I want to be a Hollywood director and direct a $5 million film. That's not it for me. For me, it's I've got these 10 projects I'm working on. I want to get those done. And when the dust settles, let's see where I am. You know, I like sort of trekking through the jungle, not knowing what's ahead, just sort of charting my path as I go through. And that's, again, that too is what's scary and exciting all at the same time.
You know, it's funny that you say that because so many people are like, oh, you got to have a business plan. You want to write a book or you want to do this or you want to do that? Well, you got to write it down in a business plan. And I'm like, but that doesn't mean it's going to ever happen or get done. That just means that you're putting it to paper. You're spending time on something else than actually working on it, in my opinion. And unless you're starting a brick and mortar store or something to that effect. But even then, I think a business plan should be no more than maybe a paragraph of like, okay, we want to start here and within five sentences end here and we'll change it along as we go.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I would have had the foresight to say, you know what, if I want to turn this into a business, let me sit down and let me really figure out the numbers, which I never did. I never had a business plan. I sort of been making it up as I go along. Yes, when I did decide to leave my job and sell my house, I did have to say, you know, I believe in taking the leap of faith, but you got to have a parachute. Like, I'm like, okay, how long can I survive? How long can my kids keep eating and being fed and go to school if zero money comes in? Like, if I don't make a dollar for the next 6 months, is my family still going to be okay? That was probably the extent of what my business plan was. I think now as I work with people or if I work with businesses, I do start to say, okay, let's start figuring out potentially budgeting for, you know, marketing, or if you're a podcaster, for equipment or for attending conferences or whatever it may be. So you should sort of think about it a little bit in terms of, you know, the dollars and cents. But I am not you're right. It's not a brick and mortar. You know, you're not opening up a bagel store and have to figure out, OK, what's my equipment going to cost? What are my monthly expenses going to be? But to a certain degree, you have to do that in terms of the income and expenses for you as a solo small business.
Well, I mean, for you originally with the book, it didn't need to make any money because you had a job. You know,
correct.
You had your other business and everything, which is amazing that you found time to write a book. I mean, I'm trying to write my first book now, and I'm about halfway through it. But it's getting in that mindset to write and draw, because it's a artist type. Or I'm doing illustrations in the book. You know, is difficult, and it takes. You know, I need at least a couple hours at a time. It's not something that I could sit down for just like, oh, I have an hour, so I'm just going to sit down and write. It would take me an hour just to sit down and reread through what I already have just to get into the mind frame.
Yeah, I will tell you that when I signed my contract, and I actually signed with a publisher, I signed a 3-book deal. Literally, as the hands were being shaken, he said, "Whatever you do, don't quit your day job. Like, don't. You're not going to make a fortune selling books. I, you know, I think to a certain degree, unless you are J.K. Rowling or whomever, you know, books, the book is the new business card to a certain degree. But Joe, I would challenge you if you're a morning person, you get up 90 minutes earlier and you do nothing for those 90 minutes other than write. You write 500 words a day. At the end of a few months, you've got a book done. Or if it's got to be 90 minutes at the end of the day, you dedicate nothing but those 90 minutes to that project. And you'll be, if you say, I'm going to write 500 words a day, you'll be surprised how fast that book gets finished.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny is the book is not even a book for people who like to read, because I don't care to read books. So each chapter is only about a page, page and a half. It's just, and I already have most of it outlined. I just, finding the time to get into the state of mind to write is difficult. But I like the idea of blocking off time, and I'm already thinking in my head, okay, what can I cut out at the end of not, you know, at the end of a day or at the beginning of a day to make that happen?
The other thing I would do too is, if you really want to get it done, you look realistically at a calendar and you pick that date. You say, you know what, if it's June 1st, you mark it on your calendar and you print out a big piece of paper and stick it on your computer or stick it on the wall in front of you, and you let that date stare you in the face every day. I'm like, I need to get this book needs to be done by that date. I think we self-discipline and setting false or realistic deadlines is a great motivator too.
Well, Lou, if you knew all the projects I had going on right now, my whole wall would be filled up with pieces of paper with dates on it. It would turn into a calendar. It would literally turn into a calendar.
Pick the most important one, man. Pick the one that means the most to you and work on that first.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the book is definitely going on the wall. So, Lou, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
I will tell you, man, I love what you're doing. I love this idea of the Dreamers podcast, right? Because, you know, normally you hear about dreams and it's something that when you think about dreams, they associate with kids. And I think that as we get older and reality starts to set in, we very much forget about the idea of and the ability to dream because, like you say, that sometimes they seem so far out of reach, they'll never come true. And I think the fact that you are letting people share their stories and inspire others by showing people who have made their dreams come true and continue to make their dreams come true is awesome. You know, I wish I would have had something like this a long time ago because I don't think you realize the service that you're doing for people. So I am thrilled to be on here and to be part of it. And I really appreciate you inviting me on.
Oh, I appreciate all of that. Thank you. I really love the idea of getting to talk about dreams and what people are doing because it's, you know, a lot of people told me I should have a podcast, including Mr. Scopa and Michelle Scudder McLean. And which, by the way, Scopa said that he knew you when.
We both started out way back when, man, in 2005. He's a good guy. I like Mike a lot.
He is definitely a great guy. And I think what was great was they said, Joe, you should have a podcast. You could be, you know, Jersey Joe talking about Disney World and it would be great. And this was like 2 years ago. And I was like, you know, I don't, what would I talk about? I was like, by episode 10, I'd be bored of the topic because I do so many different things. I don't think I would. I mean, I love Disney. I go 4 to 6 times a year. I don't know if that classifies as moving time. But I think it's getting pretty close, but I don't foresee myself leaving Jersey in the warmth of Philadelphia. So
you'll miss the cheesesteaks. I'll tell you that much. You'll definitely miss the cheesesteaks.
Cheesesteaks, hoagies, though they have Wawa down there now. So
they have Wawa.
So life's gotten better in Florida. But, you know, when the idea came for an interview show and the idea that I could do it about different people and, you know, doing their different things, whether it's directors, writers, actors, actresses, voice actors, podcasters, entrepreneurs, everything, really. I just fell in love with the idea because I know so many people that are living their dream. I mean, coming from a business background myself, I know plenty of entrepreneurs. I could have had, you know, plenty of people on the show that about entrepreneurs outside of the fact that everybody seems to have an entrepreneur show. But, you know, I really thought that being able to talk to people about what it is that they're doing and how they're doing it and how their dreams prior to that really, you know, make the difference. My question to you, Lou, is what was your childhood dream?
As a kid, I always wanted to – well, I take that back. Let me go back a little bit. I first thought I wanted to be an actor, right? And I actually started college as a theater major. But growing up, I really – and I think there was some overlap there. I started to know relatively early on, like in grammar school, that I wanted to be a lawyer, right? It was my dad who was my hero and always will be. I admired what he did. He taught me that the practice of law was a noble profession, and I liked the idea of helping people. And I watched And Justice for All, and I watched L.A. Law, and I'm like, yeah, but they lied because being a lawyer is nothing like that. So, you know, I knew from grammar school, like the high school I chose was one that was the best in the area because I knew I wanted to go to a good college. I wanted to go to a good law school. Like that was the path I knew I was going to be on. Like, so from sixth grade, seventh grade, you know, we think that we see, and that's the point. We think that we see what our future is going to be like. And sometimes it's much more circuitous and even better than we expect.
Lou, I got to tell you, I just had the thought of that scene from Catch Me If You Can, where he's in the courtroom showing exhibits and the guy's like, and the judge's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, what you see on TV and in the movies, not necessarily what, like what a typical day is like practicing law. So,
well, Lou, I would love for you to share your websites for anyone who doesn't know, which is would be hard to believe, but for anybody who doesn't know, how they can get in contact with you as well.
Sure. All of the Disney stuff that I do, the podcasts and the videos and the events and stuff, can be found over at WDW, like Walt Disney World, WDWradio.com. And everything else that I do on the business and entrepreneurial and podcasting side of things can be found at LouMongello.com. And I am Lou Mongello on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else.
Is it true that that Mongello is a form of greeting? Because that other that other podcast about Disney World, that's something I learned from them.
They're the ones, yeah. They, you know, they're good guys. We've been friends for a long time, so. Yeah, how they started making my last name a salutation, I have no idea.
So. It sounds legitimate. Like, it sounds like something you would say in Italian or, I don't know, some romantic language. Well, Lou, I really enjoyed having you on today, and I would love to have you on again in about a year and catch up on how everything's been going for you.
Yeah, man, I would love to. This has been a blast. I am a new listener and a new subscriber, and if there's ever anything that I could do to help you, man, please let me know.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And if there's anything I could do, you know, for you, please don't hesitate to ask.
Awesome, brother.
Well, thank you again, Lou.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/DreamersPodcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Hey Dreamers, Joe here. I really appreciate you listening to Dreamers Podcast. If you'd like to find out how to support the show, please visit howtodream.co/support for all the ways you can help out. Thanks for the support, and please keep on dreaming.